4 days ago, this place was packed and filled with light. Candlelight passed hand to hand, music swelled, voices sang with confidence and with joy, and we proclaimed angels and glory and peace on earth. And then Christmas morning came, and it went. The candles were blown out, the choir folders were closed, and the sanctuary grew quiet again. And today, on this first Sunday after Christmas, it can feel smaller, quieter. There's no music. Almost like an afterthought. The feast has ended, and we're left with just ordinary winter lights and potentially tired bodies and hearts. But listen again to the collect that we just prayed. Almighty God, you have poured upon us the new light of your incarnate word. Grant that this light, enkindled in our hearts, may shine forth in our lives. And notice for a moment what it doesn't ask for. It doesn't ask God to keep the lights blazing forever. It doesn't ask for spectacle or certainty. It asks that that light enkindled in our hearts may shine steadily, quietly into our lives. Because here's something that we don't often say out loud at Christmas. Too much light can actually blind us. Anyone who has ever stepped out of a dark movie theater into the bright afternoon sun knows that feeling. We squint and we stumble. We just can't see clearly. And the spiritual life works much the same way. Barbara Brown Taylor, in her fantastic book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, writes, "I learned things in the dark that I could have never learned in the light." She insists that darkness is not the opposite of God, but often the very place where God waits for us. And in another passage, she says, "Darkness is shorthand for anything that scares me, either because I don't understand it or because I fear that it will change me." Now, we tend to associate God with brilliance, with mountaintop moments and radiant certainty, triumphant joy. And those moments matter. Of course they do. Christmas Eve matters. The candles matter. But if we expect God to show up only there, we're going to miss God everywhere else. And think about the story that we just celebrated this week. The angels came at night. The shepherds saw glory in dark fields, but then the angels left. The singing stopped. Morning came. Joseph and Mary woke up the next day to a much quieter reality. Sure, there was a baby that was probably still crying, and animals still breathing warm air into the cold. Their bodies perhaps sore from travel, questions unanswered. There was no choir, there was no proclamation, just this new, slow, ordinary work of caring for a fragile new life. That morning light must have felt very different from the glory and the spectacle of the night before. Perhaps it was softer, less certain. And yet that, right there, is where the incarnation actually lived. Not in the angel song, but in the feeding and the holding and the wondering what comes next. And I know this feeling especially well in the days after Christmas. I've often joked that the 12 days of Christmas are the church's Christmas present to us clergy. We spend weeks, sometimes months, pouring ourselves into getting everyone else to Christmas. By the time Christmas Eve comes, it's just all adrenaline and prayer at that point. And then suddenly, it's over. In these days after Christmas, though, I finally get to enjoy the season in a deeper way, in a more spiritual way, to breathe and to linger and to settle into living with the Christ child in the world rather than just kind of rushing from moment to moment. The church gives us all permission not just to announce the incarnation, but to inhabit it. This rhythm reminds me of my time at Harborview as a chaplain intern. I would arrive at the hospital in the afternoon sunlight. From the outside, the Art Deco building looked stoic. But then the night would unfold, and there would be pages and alarms and tears and trauma and waiting rooms that were just loaded with fear and rooms that were just steeped in silence. And then in the morning, I would walk out as the sun was rising. It was the same building. It was the same world I had left the afternoon before, but the light was very different. It wasn't triumphant or celebratory. It wasn't stony and stoic. It was gentle and it was patient. It was a kind of peace that didn't erase what happened in the night, but held it there. And that is the kind of light that our collect prays for. John tells us that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. But neither did that light deny the darkness. The light did not pound the darkness into submission. Rather, the light knew how to live with the darkness. And again, Barbara Brown Taylor reminds us that when we learn to walk in the dark, we discover that God has been there all along. The darkness slows us down. It humbles us. It sharpens our senses. It trains us to trust something deeper than our own certainty. This Sunday after Christmas invites us into that kind of faith. A faith that doesn't depend on constant brightness. A faith that can sit quietly with a newborn and wonder just what kind of world we've brought them into. A faith that can carry the light of Christ not as a spotlight, but as a flame, a steady flame. The incarnation did not end with the angels. It began with a child who would grow slowly and quietly, obedient to the rhythms of a normal life. God chose to be known not just in glory, but in intense vulnerability. Not just in light, but also in shadow. So if today feels quieter to you, smaller, more subdued, take heart. This is not faith fading, this is faith maturing. The light of Christ has been poured into your hearts. Not to blind you and not to shield you from the darkness, but to help you see God there too. And as that light shines forth in your life, gently and persistently, it will be enough.